Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. You can visit us online at kosherscene.wordpress.com. This past Wednesday, the Kosher Scene held a live radio broadcast from Nargila Grill at 1599 York Avenue between 84th and 85th in Manhattan's Upper East Side. Due to some glitches, we've compiled a modified makeup broadcast, and this is it. Once a month, at Nargila, the owner's mother cooks authentic Bukharian cuisine. This time, however, the guest chef was the owner's uncle, author of a book on Jewish Bukharian cooking. We sampled sundry mild and spicy salads, followed by a dish of palov, a distinctive, naturally sweetened rice with carrots and pieces of beef stew. Our group discussion revolved around the culture of Jewish cuisine and its ability to retain its core elements during the course of its millenniums of evolution. Joining me were Alessandra Robati from Dinner in Venice, Gila Hackerman, author of the upcoming The Kosher Revolution, Kim Amzalag from Kosher Inspired Mishpacha Magazines, Levana Kirschenbaum from levanacooks.com, and author of four books, including the brand new The Whole Foods Kosher Kitchen, Marlene Mami from The Kosher Hostess, and Shoshana Ruff from The Kosher Shopaholic. Gil Marx, in his Encyclopedia of Jewish Food, writes, quote, "Food is more than just sustenance. It is a reflection of the history, culture, and values, and it is especially true of the Jewish people, a community that spans the globe. From Brooklyn to India and everywhere in between, Jewish food is represented by a fascinating array of dishes, rituals, and traditions. Jewish cuisine is truly international. In every location Jews settled, they brought culinary traditions and also adapted local dishes, modifying them to fit their own dietary laws, lifestyles, and tastes. Unique traditions and dishes were developed within the cuisines of North Africa, Europe, Persia, and the Mediterranean, but all are recognizably Jewish." Unquote. Food is an integral part of Jewish culture. It has been essential to our traditions and rituals. Hashem created Adam and placed him in the Garden of Eden with express instructions not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. This was mankind's first limiting lesson regarding foods that we may or must not eat. And it was through food that the newly created human disobeyed the very first instruction given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so, our fall from grace began. Food represents both the sustainment of life and the origin of evil. This strange juxtaposition is later navigated through adherence to the laws of kashrut, brought to balance our desires and unify through our bodies our relationship with God, elevating the carnal into holiness, separating us from other nations as we historically transition from herbivore to carnivore diets. Halacha instructed us that we may and may not eat, as we incorporated law and ritual of Jewish life amidst our foreign neighbors. Historically, food has always had religious, medicinal, or spiritual significance. Certain herbs, fruits, etc., were customarily deemed healthy. Certain ritualistic foods associated with specific holidays were intended to elevate our awareness, reinforcing our connection to our past and our relationship with our Creator. The blessings said before we put everything in our mouth sanctify the earthly, elevating us, entwining us with a soul that connects to something higher. Food, coupled with a strict adherence to our dietary laws, becomes essential and integral to our Jewish lifestyle. Without starving ourselves, And still, there is nothing boring or rigid about the Jewish diet. Alessandro Rovati, the blog Dinner in Venice, pointed out that Jewish Italian cooking was considered the jewel of Italian cuisine. Jews started arriving in the Italian peninsula during the Roman Empire's heyday, as attested to this day by the Roman ghetto in Lungotevere Cenci, right next to the ruins of the Roman Empire. The Roman Forum, and within walking distance of the Colosseum. They came from all over the Mediterranean basin and brought with them the traditions they cultivated throughout the various regions. As they adapted and combined their food customs with what was available locally, they developed and enhanced Italian cuisine. Presentation is also very important when setting up Jewish table fare. Marlene Mami of the Jewish Hostess blog illustrated how in Syrian Jewish cuisine, the hostess always strove to present culinary traditions, culinary creations, in the most attractive manner affordable in honor of Shabbat and the holy days. The local topography had a direct impact in the availability of food in any given season. But through it all, the Syrian Jewish hostess fully understood long ago what 18th and 19th century French politician and gastronome extraordinaire Jean-Antelme Briat Savarin describes in his Physiologie du Goût, The Physiology of Taste. He writes that it is the eye and the nose that will entice us to or stop us from partaking of a particular dish, while the actual taste plays a very secondary role, at least the first time we consume the particular item. As times and technology advanced, we came to understand that certain methods of preparation were more healthy than others. We also found that some of the old natural ways of preparing things, albeit in new variations and combinations, only serve to enhance not just taste, but our overall eating experience, as evidenced by Levana Kirschenbaum's brand new The Whole Foods Kosher Kitchen. She shows us that without starving ourselves, by merely changing our eating habits, we can lose weight, restore our health, and keep ourselves young and energetic for far longer. Susanna Raff from the Kosher Shopaholic found it remarkable how, in spite of the different foods available throughout the various lands of our exile, in spite of the various traditions, so much of the basic Jewish fare is at its core similar, regardless of what country or origin Jews reside in. Kim Amzalad of Kosher-inspired Mishpacha magazines commented on the remarkable mosaic of Jews and foods of different origins, on varied customs in different parts of the world, and how this seemingly disparate amalgam was at all unmistakably, recognizably Jewish. Nargila Grill's owner's mother, explained to us that the Bukharan cuisine is vaguely similar to Persian because of a somewhat shared topology and climate, and because of a tremendous similarity between the old Emirate of Bukhara, or Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, as we call it in our days, and the Persians in their customs and their languages. I already extolled the Uzbeki cuisine on my own blog at kosherscene.wordpress.com in an article called An Uzbeki Melave Malka. You just might enjoy it. Look it up. When I asked Gila Hackerman, author of the upcoming The Kosher Revolution, which will be out on the shelves this August, if she agreed with the statement that Arthur Schwartz makes on her kosherrevolution.com website that, quote, kosher is a set of rules, not a cuisine, she answered that those were not her words, but strictly the opinion of Arthur Schwartz. When asked to elaborate, she explained that in today's day and age, when communications, travel, and technology in general have considerably shrunk our planet and we now are exposed to various exotic cuisines as never before, when the average Jew is no longer confined to his village and immediate surroundings, kosher cuisine is suddenly far more encompassing, far more a part of the global village, though it still retains its uniquely Jewish character. To me, the art of cooking is no less an art than literature at its finest. Just like every country has its classics, new and old, like Spain's Cervantes or Lope de Vega, like England's Shakespeare or Marlowe, like France's Rabelais, Alexandre Dumas, or Alfred de Musset, like Russia's Tolstoy, Gorky, or Solzhenitsyn, like Italy's Dante, Torquato Tasso, or Italo Calvino, and so on, every cuisine has its unique creators, who display the same degree of imagination, the same understanding of their medium as writers, as painters, the same sensitivities to the subtle nuances of their instrument, ingredients in this case, as the greatest, most celebrated composers. Yet, though their works of art have a very short lifespan, and more often than not the creator's name has long been forgotten, a great culinary creation would endure the ages, imitated and sometimes improved to accommodate our evolving tastes. Through it all, one can always tell, just like in the case of changing fashion, if overall times are affluent or depressed. Food is more often than not a barometer of the times. As Gil Marx tells it, European Ashkenazim, unlike their Sephardi brothers, for many centuries had shied away from vegetables. Rabbinic responsa were written decrying the use of vegetables as unhealthy. In fact, tomatoes were also called as trefene apple, unkosher apples. Then, in the middle of the 19th century, famine spread through Eastern Europe, and the already impoverished Jewish masses desperately needed to change their diets, and so the traditional meat-based Shabbat Pashtida, dating back all the way to Mishnaic times, was supplanted by kugel and cholent. And Ashkenazic Jews suddenly discovered what Sephardim in the Mediterranean basin had known all along. There was nothing unhealthy or trace about vegetables. Quite the contrary. Eastern European cholent evolved because Jews needed something that could cook slowly on Shabbos and without burning, something that was filling yet inexpensive. The same criteria was instrumental in developing the similar Sephardi dafina, haminado, hamin. Though there were no telephones, no internet, though there were no planes, no cars, and travel by sea was perilous and took a very long time, Jews, throughout the land of their dispersion, often without any communication, came up with similar dishes, because our dietary laws, our traditions, dictated it. As for the question as to whether there is a distinct Jewish cookery, while we have adapted and refined other people's cuisine, the answer is a resounding yes. Many a secular Jew recalls with longing the aromas and the tastes of traditional foods and various holidays in his or her younger years. And while they are trying their best to integrate into their cultural surroundings and adapt their customs, just like Hermann Hesse's Steppenwolf, who was strongly anti-bourgeois and yet unable to fully divorce himself from his bourgeois comforts, neither can these conformists last without the occasional traditional Jewish food that fuels their nostalgia for a past they would rather disavow. Jewish communist writers, murdered by Stalin, like David Bergelson, Isaac Babel, and others, may have intended their message to be universal, but chose Jewish characters to convey their art. Ultimate opportunists, absolute survivors throughout the worst of Stalinist and subsequent Russian regimes, Ilya Ehrenburg, a firm atheist, could not resist bringing in a Jewish character or two in his Adventures of Julio Jurinito and His Disciples. Or the stormy life of Lassik Rochwanz. These writers desperately attempted to separate themselves from their Jewish roots, but couldn't. Just like they failed at this task, and willingly or not, remained as easily identifiable Jews. So it is that whether we consume Chinese, Thai, Japanese, Libyan, or any other cuisine, as long as it complies with the laws of kashrut, it has willingly or unwillingly been transformed into Jewish cuisine. Ehrenburg, in his memoir, speaking about his oft-changing public stances and sycophantic praise of Stalin, only while the latter was alive, of course, says, quote, "If within a lifetime a man changes his skin an infinite number of times, almost as often as his suits, he still does not change his heart, for he has but one," unquote. Food, once it complies with Jewish dietary law, regardless of how many times the ingredients were and will still be amended, and as long as it stays within the prescribed parameters, will forever be Jewish, regardless of origin. The one who eats it will never manage to fully extinguish the tiny Jewish flame, forever burning and warming his or her heart. Whether I taste couscous, cholent, tafina, kibbeh, lahamejin, brisket, mugine in bianco, carciofi alla giudia, antipasti, pirogis, kreplach, mamaliga, goulash, or holopches, I am essentially partaking of nothing more than the rich diversity of essentially Jewish cuisine. Briat Savarin wrote, "The destiny of nations depends on how they are fed." How true. How true. Once again, we want to thank Nargila Grill for the delicious food and invite you to visit them at 1599 York Avenue between 84th and 85th Street in Manhattan's Upper East Side. Their moderate prices will amaze you. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene at koshersin.wordpress.com. We will be back this Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock with exciting guests. Hope to see you then. Goodbye for now and have a great evening.